But if we don't start talking, then, you know, who knows? Who knows what might happen?
I know. What if we just don't speak?
Who knows what might happen? Although, we're going to kiss.
We should speak.
Because it's our job. Hey, everybody, I'm Conor Bresdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. Making today make sense is what we do around here.
And I'm Kimberly Adams. Thank you for joining us on this Monday. We are going to do the news. We're going to do some Make Me Smiles. And so, yeah, let's get into it. Hope you had a good weekend.
I did. Although, as we were chatting beforehand, you just decided to mellow out, which I think is awesome. That's very cool.
Oh, yeah, I hid from the world. It was great.
There you go.
All right, what's your news?
All right. I got a couple, and then I got one I haven't even put on here, and I'm debating whether or not I should mention it because Bridget Bodner is going to climb through the slack and climb onto this podcast somehow. But number one, this seems it's a story that's not what it's about. Okay, so here's the deal: there is an item that I saw on NPR today on their website, and I'll just read the first sentence. Authorities have discovered more human remains in Lake Mead, the country's largest reservoir by volume, which is located east of Las Vegas. The reason they are discovering more human remains, and this is the second one in like a week, they found a body in a barrel about three, 4 days ago, is because water levels at Lake Mead and other key reservoirs out west are at record low levels. And that's really, really bad because that's drinking water and agricultural water, and it's all kinds of stuff for the bajillion of us who live out here in what is fundamentally a desert. But the titillating part of it is that as these water levels go down, and let's remember, this is right near Las Vegas, and Las Vegas is, you know, not exactly the most hospitable place sometimes if you're on the wrong side of those who are in charge of Las Vegas. They're finding all these bodies in the water, what used to be the water, but now it's dry land. And I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, my God.
There was a whole episode of Criminal Minds, like, based on this concept. Have you ever seen that show?
Oh, my God. I have not.
Yeah.
I have not.
I'll look it up and try to find which episode it was. But yeah, it was that there was a drought and water levels at some lake dropped.
Yeah.
And I mean, I hope maybe some families are going to get some closure, but that's awful.
Yeah.
And also climate change, dear
awful.
God. We're in trouble.
Yeah. For sure. For sure. Okay. That's item one. Item two is crypto writ large. Okay. Now, I say this actually on a day where Bitcoin, the granddaddy of all cryptocurrencies, traded below $31,000 a piece, which is off, I think it's like 40-something percent calendar year to date. Could be more than that. I'm not really sure. But it's definitely down 50% from its peak of $64,000. And I mention that because an article in the Wall Street Journal caught my eye. And I just need to very quickly say I've got a very high level understanding of, by which I mean not in depth as opposed to high level I understand it all, of the various cryptocurrencies and stablecoins and all this stuff, right? But there's a headline in an article in the Wall Street Journal today that says cryptocurrency Terra USD falls below fixed value, triggering sell-off. Now, Terra USD is what's called a stablecoin, and these stablecoins are supposed to be, oh, guess what? Stable against the dollar. Okay? One coin of a stablecoin variety is supposed to keep its value of $1, right? And that is a way to let the extremely volatile crypto market have a little bit of stability. But Terra USD fell below a buck this past weekend in trading. Now, I'm just going to read you something.
Okay.
Okay. Hold on. So this stablecoin, Terra USD, is an algorithmic stablecoin. So it's not actually backed by actual real American dollars. And here's the quote. These pseudo dollars aren't necessarily backed by any assets at all, instead relying on financial engineering to maintain their link to the dollar. In Terra USD's case, if its price falls below $1, traders can, quote, burn the coin or permanently remove it from circulation in exchange for $1 worth of new units of another cryptocurrency called Luna.
I had to read that because I read this before the show, and when you put it in, I had to read that section several times for it to make sense. And I still am like, you do what to what?
Right.
So
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, look, I'm just going to say this. There will be amazing things that cryptocurrency and the blockchain and stablecoins can do. But as of right now, it's not there. And my fear, see also Fidelity letting people put their retirement accounts into, or Bitcoin into their retirement accounts, right? My fear is that Joe Mom and Pop is going to say, oh, look, Terra USD, it can't go below a buck. And bang, it goes below a buck because these dollars aren't necessarily backed by any assets at all, instead relying on financial engineering to maintain their link to the dollar. It's not there yet. Crypto's not there yet. And inexperienced investors are going to get involved in it and bad things are going to happen.
And I mean, experienced investors are going to get involved in it and bad things are going to happen.
Yeah.
But as you said, there are surely going to be good uses for this technology. But this was a story. I saw this story earlier today. CNBC has a whole crypto world section. Today, one of the stories they have, the headline is 40% of Bitcoin investors are now underwater.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I mean,
so those are, I don't want to beat up on this too much. And look, there's a case to be made that we should do a show on Web3 and the upside of crypto. Because, look, the blockchain can be an amazing thing. Let me rephrase that. I am sure that we're not there yet. I'm not sure we're there yet. I am sure we're not there yet.
Have you seen all these stories coming out about all these people who are now starting to recognize that their NFTs are worthless? And
oh yeah, like, please come on, come
it's,
on.
It's sad.
I got a bridge in Brooklyn. I want to sell you. I feel bad. But how is that supposed to work? Here's this thing that I can get a screenshot of off the internet, but you're going to pay $6,500 for X, Y, and Z. I don't get it. Or you know, six figures or eight figures. Right.
I mean, I'm going to go back to the sort of name a star registry example that somebody gave me in an interview.
Right.
People did that for years, you know. I think you still can.
Right.
People artificially create value on lots of things. And then you get sort of the mind hive of the internet like gassing you up and telling you that you're missing out on this great investment opportunity and all these things. And people, look, because none of us have pensions and people are trying to, and because this understanding the stock market is hard, I get why people are looking for, you know, looking to people who they think are smarter than them on these things for guidance. And when that person guides you wrong, you're screwed. And I have a lot of distaste, to put it mildly, for the celebrities and the sports people and the podcasters who led people to these things. But those that was actually not my news item. So I'm going to
Wait. Can I slide one in here?
Oh, right. You had another one.
This is the Bridget Bonner item. I'm just going to say I'm a little worried about Queen Elizabeth. I'm a little worried. She's not going to make the state opening of Parliament tomorrow. She's 96. That's it. Just want to get that out there. I'm a little worried.
I'm trying to figure out a way that I can say this and not be murdered when I next go to St. Louis. my grandmother is aging very well, and I do not think that being 96 by itself is a cause for concern. I think that's safe.
That is safe.
She will murder me if I say her age on the radio or a podcast.
Nope. You did well. You did well. All right. I just wanted to get that out there. Please go on now that I've hijacked this.
But no, I wish her the best of health, Queen Elizabeth and to the family. I mean, and also like she recently lost her husband and that does things to people. Especially when you've been married a long time, like that's hard. Okay. Right. So two stories from me. The first one is this pretty significant settlement between Clearview AI and the ACLU. Have you seen this story?
No.
Mm-mm. Okay. So facial recognition company Clearview AI, this is the one that basically scrapes photos, or in the past has scraped photos from like social media companies, from dating sites, and all these other places where you put your picture online and think that it exists in a bubble, but it actually doesn't. It exists everywhere. And they built a facial recognition system that includes like massive chunks of the world that you can run, you know, somebody's photo through, and it can match with your face and all these things. And lots of people are very concerned about the privacy implications of that, government abuse in various parts of the world. And even here in the United States, a lot of activists have complained that when police departments use this, they can use it to sort of profile and, you know, track people without a warrant and stuff. So ACLU sues them, and in a settlement announced today, and I'm reading the Verge covered it, but it's lots of places, Clearview AI has agreed to permanently ban most private companies from using its services. And it also will not sell or distribute freely its database and its technology within the U.S. It can still work with federal agencies and local police departments, but not outside of Illinois, which is where this case was, because Illinois has a data privacy law that's pretty strict on these things. Another thing that this settlement includes is that they won't give free trials to individual police officers without like the department being involved, because apparently that was another thing that was very much of a concern for people, that, you know, a police officer, even if your department didn't have a subscription, you might be able to get like a free trial and use this very powerful software to identify people. So this is a big deal. However, I wonder how enforceable this is, because, okay, so if you can't sell the tech in the United States, and private companies in the U.S. won't use its, can't use its services anymore, what's to stop any U.S. company from subcontracting out to a company in another country that can use the tech? I mean, but I don't know. Anyway, that's a big deal. And then quickly, I guess I'm probably not going to get through this quickly. There's an opinion piece in the Washington Post that talks about an interview that Senator Chris Murphy did. I think it was on one of the Sunday shows, right? And in it, they're talking about this, you know, looming Supreme Court decision, probably almost certainly overturning Roe versus Wade, right? And Congress, the Democrats in Congress, are trying to push through legislation to basically make abortion legal in the United States and make sure that individual states can't get around it, right? This legislation is probably not going to pass, almost certainly not going to pass.
Yeah.
And Democrats are pushing to basically get rid of the filibuster, the legislative filibuster, to allow some version of legislation to get through on a party line vote if they can get Manchin and others on board. Because, according to Murphy, let me just see if I can find a good point of this article. Senator Murphy says, if the court overturns Roe, the Connecticut Democrat says, once Republicans take control of Congress and the White House, they'll end the legislative filibuster to pass a national abortion ban with a simple majority in the Senate. When the opportunity presents itself, there's no doubt in my mind that they'll change the rules to pass a bill criminalizing abortion federally. This law lays bare a nightmare scenario for Democrats. It isn't just that Republicans might succeed in passing such a ban. It's also that Democrats might fail to suspend the filibuster themselves to pass national abortion rights protections and then see Republicans successfully end the filibuster to pass a national ban. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And I think that's an entirely likely outcome of the next, let's see, one of the midterms, 180 days from now. Yeah, absolutely.
And they're really kind of stuck because, you know, mm-hmm. there's a big contingent that's like, don't blow up the filibuster, don't blow up the filibuster. And Mitch McConnell is like swearing up and down that he would never, you know, end the filibuster. And so Democrats shouldn't do it. And he's not going to do it, you know, once, you know, if the Republicans get back in power. Let's also remember his promises around Supreme Court confirmations and, mm-hmm. and things like that and how well that yeah. stood up. So this is this adds another layer of stakes to the midterm elections, and Democrats are certainly planning to run on this and basically saying that if Republicans win, your reproductive rights are at risk forever. So that is mm-hmm. it was a very interesting opinion piece and lays out the argument and the freak out moment that a lot of Democrats are having at the moment.
Yep. Lots of freaking out, for sure.
Well, I mean, and not just Democrats. Lots of I don't want to diminish how serious this is in many people all over the country also freaking out.
Yep. Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
From freak out
all right.
to smile.
Charlton.
We need a smile.
Yes.
Okay, I saw yours
right,
over the
so,
weekend. It made me chuckle,
yes.
too.
Oh, my God. It's amazing. So Trevor Noah, the host of The Daily Show, great observational humor and a great rock on tour of those observations. We're going to put this link on our show page. But he did a riff a couple of days ago about the Federal Reserve and interest rates. But then he got into Elon Musk and how Elon Musk, at $260 billion, the richest man in the world, can be really cash poor, but still can manage to borrow a bunch of money against all his Tesla shares to buy Twitter. That's the only way I can summarize this thing is you got to see it. It's about 4 minutes long. Trevor does a great job. And I'm just gonna leave that right where it is.
Yeah, it was great because the crux of it is like he can't be taxed on the money, but he can spend the money.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. It's really easy to be rich in this economy. You can make a lot of money when you're rich without spending a lot of money. That's what
and
it is.
It's very expensive to be poor.
Yeah. Yep. Yep, yep.
Mine is a sports one. There's a lovely story in the New York Times about a man named Tom House, who is basically this expert on throwing things. And he works with baseball players and football players, and he has like broken down the way that the human arm throws things to this extreme level of science. And he's so good at his job, and he's working with this group, and they've created like an app to, because even though he works with very famous people, he wants to extend this knowledge so that kids can learn how to throw things better for sports, mm-hmm. ideally, but we'll see. Yeah. But it's like an app that allows them to get some of these techniques and to learn from one of the best in the business. What drew me to this piece, it has an amazing opening, and I'm just going to read it, and I hope you go back and read it.
Yeah.
It's a long piece, but it's lovely.
Degree.
When most of the world first became familiar with Tom House, he was catching Hank Aaron's record-breaking 715th homer in 1974. House, then a relief pitcher for Atlanta, was stationed in the bullpen beyond the left field fence at Fulton County Stadium, just where the ball happened to come down exactly as House had planned it.
Yep, it's great. It's a great piece.
He knows how these things, how like the physics of it and the physics of the human body works so well that he knew exactly where to position himself to catch that ball. I think that's amazing.
Yeah. It is
anyway,
absolutely amazing. It is absolutely amazing. Yeah. It's a good piece.
Also,
good
what's
piece.
Amazing is all of the
nice
support
turn.
That we've been getting.
Nice turn. Good job.
Thank you. Thank you. The amazing support we've been getting from everyone who has donated over the weekend and so far in our fundraising drive. Thank you so much from that. We do still have about $20,000 left in that pot of matching funds from Tim Ranzetta and NextGen Personal Finance. That's, you know, money that we're going to use to help educate teens and kids about money with our programs like Million Bazillion. Yay, Bridget and Ryan and all the other team that's working on that. And yeah, so if we can please get more support, that would be awesome.
Marketplace.org/givesmart is where to go. And if you hook us up while that match is still in effect, $20,000, your money goes twice as far. Marketplace.org/givesmart, or you can click the link in the show notes. And there you go. There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Super quick on the way out because we went a little long today. We are back tomorrow with a deep dive into Title 42 and immigration during the pandemic. It is, look, it's complicated. It's political. It's a labor force story. It's also social because there are people on the other end of this policy. We're going to talk about that, and we hope you're there.
And please tell us what you thought about today's show or any of the shows. You can send us a voice memo or an email to makemesmart@marketplace.org, or you can call and leave a voice message at 508-UB-SMART.
This podcast that is in your feed right now is called Make Me Smart. It is produced by Marissa Cabrera. Our intern is Tiffany Bowie. Today's program was engineered by Charlton Thorpe.
Our senior producer is Bridget Bodner, and the director of On Demand is Donna Tam.
Boom.
I have to say, there was almost a Jasper crisis a moment ago. He really looked like he was about to knock something over, and I was like, don't do it,
Ken. Oh, no, Jasper crisis.
Don't do it.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.